Hello, my name is Max Bengtsson, and I'm an urban planner at Tyréns. And today we're going to talk about electrification and also work-life balance. Tune in and enjoy the show.
Thank you so much for listening to Urbanistica podcast. I am Mustafa Sharif, an urban planner, and you're more than welcome to join my big journey of exploring the making of smarter and more livable cities. Please don't forget to follow Urbanistica on the different social media platforms, and also let's connect on LinkedIn. Big thanks to Urbanistica podcast partner, AFRI. AFRI is an international engineering and design company providing sustainable solutions in the fields of energy, industry, and infrastructure. Are you ready for a new episode? Let's go for it. Today we have a new story, but not a new storyteller, because he was a guest with us, I think, in the beginning of the podcast, during the COVID when I started the podcast. So I'd love to welcome you back, Max, to Urbanistica podcast. Hello and welcome again.
Thank you. I was here before it was cool.
It's always cool, no? How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm so happy to see you.
And yeah, likewise.
Yeah, like for you listeners, me and Max, we studied together at KTH here in Stockholm. So I'm so happy to see you again. We meet a lot, but now, like, for the podcast, you know, I need just to...
For real this time.
How is life going? How is work going?
It's going good. A lot of interesting stuff is happening in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to traffic plan my way through it.
Yeah, traffic plan, our future. So, Max, let's start, because we're going to talk a lot in this episode. Let's start with you. Give us a recap again. Like, tell us about you. How would you like to introduce yourself to our listener one more time?
So, my name is Max. I'm a traffic planner. I work at Tyréns, Sweden. I would say my interests lies in social sustainability in the forefront, and then I have gotten into electrification as a kind of side project in traffic planning, and really been trying to get all the information that I can about it.
Yeah. And just take us back in time about your, like, where you grew up, city, family, education, work.
So I've been traveling a lot as a kid. They call us the Ericsson generation. my dad actually worked at Ericsson.
Okay.
Telephone company.
Yeah.
So we traveled a lot. He helped build a lot of the laboratoriums in the world.
Mm.
So I've been traveling as a kid to Portugal, Germany, China, and so on.
That's cool, no?
Yeah.
Or was it disturbing, like you need to change school every time?
I was so young at that time. It was kind of okay.
Yeah.
It was okay in China as well, because we had like this school that everyone went to.
International?
International kind of. It was English, Swedish, because all the workers came with their families, and their kids also went to that school. But then everyone traveled home, you know, so I lost my connections anyway.
Yeah.
So it was fine.
Mm-hmm. So what did you study?
Study university? Or?
Yeah.
I studied environmental science to begin with.
Okay.
And realized, like, by the end of that bachelor's, that I was more interested about the social sustainability than the environmental sustainability part.
Okay.
I just found it fascinating to learn about people and how people act.
Yeah.
Kind of.
It's very difficult too.
It's very difficult.
But we studied together in sustainable urban planning and design master.
Mm?
But they're like, when we finish, we got this diploma being like an urban planner.
Mm.
But now when you introduce yourself, you say traffic.
I usually say urban planner because I think that traffic is urban planning.
Also, yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But usually my title, or how do you call it, is traffic planner.
Traffic planner.
It's mostly because they it's different in Swedish context.
Okay.
That you are an urban planner or that you are a traffic planner.
Mm.
But in essence, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. So tell me more, like, because recent, how to say, months or last year, you start to get into electrification.
I've been getting into electrification ever since I started working, actually, but
okay.
But more intense the last few years.
Yeah, yeah.
It started off with having to help, just do analysis over all of Sweden of where we need charging posts. Now it's more clear cut that we need to actually build them.
Okay. What is electrification? Can you break it down for me?
Electrification is, it's a lot of information, kind of. It can be many different things.
Mm.
For traffic specifically, it's about electrical cars.
Because now we're talking, like, do we call it mobility electrification or traffic electrification? Just to make it clear for the listener.
For me, it's traffic electrification, I would say. As I said before, there's a lot of different components to electrification. It can be electrification in your home, having solar panels, you know. But for me, since I work with traffic, it's been how do we charge our infrastructure with electricity instead of fossil fuels.
Okay. So basically, this is it.
Yeah.
It's like very short and simple.
I can say with a short answer, it's that everything should drive by using electricity instead of fossil fuels.
Okay, and maybe like it's a very big question. Why do we need to transform?
So where it's come from is basically that we can't use fossil fuels anymore. We know that that's a problem, right? Mm. So either we reduce the amount of cars that we have, which is like the one thing I want to do.
Also.
But we've also realized, especially in Sweden, we realized that first we need a transition,
mm-hmm.
kind of. Because like what we do, especially out like in the outskirts of Sweden, where there's like very low infrastructure standards, it's very hard to get by with public transport or biking, for example. Which means that somehow we need to get rid of the fossil fuel first, and then we can think about how we reduce the amount of cars.
Yeah.
And electricity is that part for us. But I have to say that electrical cars gives emissions, but not in Sweden, if you know what I mean.
We're going to talk about this more because is electrification of the traffic system something sustainable?
Both yes and no. It is sustainable in a Swedish context because the actual electrical car doesn't emit anything while you drive it, right? But what it takes to actually create these batteries that you have, that's the problem.
Mm.
You mine a lot of minerals and all of that, and that is emissions somewhere else.
Mm.
So globally,
yes,
it's better, but not good.
So the problem is the battery.
Yeah, I would say so.
And how about producing the electricity?
That's also a big problem. Right now, I would say that since we've had a lot of electricity come from gas or fossil fuels from like Russia, for example, we're starting to lean more towards finding our new ways to do it with solar panels, water power, wind power, you know. And if you have those like locally generated electricity, then it becomes another question about sustainability, I would say.
But so it's like electrification or electrical system is much more sustainable than the fossil fuel one, kind of?
I would say yes. All in all, it's better, but it's still not perfect,
yeah.
But it's better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what do we like in order to transform our system like here in Sweden? What do we need to do?
So to transform, we need to do a lot more with politics. There's a lot of political aspects with electricity that is that makes it hard for us to transition to full electrical. For example, there's been a long tradition of in the law that you are not allowed to sell electricity as a municipality, for example, which means that if the municipality put up a lot of charging posts, they can't sell the actual electricity. So they're not allowed to, or they have not been allowed to, which makes it so that they have to go and make loopholes to actually have someone else sell the electricity for them to get money. It's a complicated issue that makes it very hard to do the right thing.
Yeah. So politics first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So and they started to change that. Okay. And it's changing very rapidly right now. Like every week there's a new news about something changing.
Okay, which is good.
It's very good.
Yeah, like more opening up the market, yeah, or the rules.
So it's very good.
Yeah. So politics is number one. Mm. Then?
And then we have the actual building of everything. Since we need charging posts in all of Europe for you to be able to travel, I would say that one of the main problems right now is that people buy a lot of electrical cars. We can see that in the sales of cars, for example, in Sweden and in Europe. I would say the problem is that the charging posts aren't being built as fast as the actual sales of the cars.
Okay.
So it's like you need two things, but you only have one thing.
Yeah, you have cars, but not so many charging.
Yeah,
you call it post or station or point.
We call it. One station can have multiple points.
Yeah.
So one station is the actual like pole that have charging in it.
You can plug in your car and so.
Yeah.
On. Okay.
But the pole in itself can have like four different cables from it.
Yeah.
And that's the point.
Yeah. So more cars, electrical cars, but not so many.
Yeah.
Charging.
And you could say that why not just build like we've done with fossil fuel recharging. The problem is that fossil fuel takes a lot of less time to charge. It's just like just going to the station and just plug in and then like 40 seconds and
yeah, like
done.
Fill in the gas or the an gasoline.
An electrical car takes like can take several hours if it's not a supercharger. Then it can take up to 1 hour.
Mm-hmm. But how would you like, because now you mentioned like the market of the cars, now more electrical cars, but the reality we don't have so many stations. So how do we can't we just like start put charging station?
Yeah, you could say that, but in Sweden at least, I can only talk for Sweden here, it's a very complicated issue because you have many different organizations who are in charge of the different roads. You have the municipal roads, you have the state-owned roads, you have like privately owned roads, and all of these need to coexist for you to actually be able to build. And what I can say is usually the municipality is a lot faster than the state with building, which creates this problem. A fun fact about it is that we, as of right now, build around 60 charging posts per week in Europe.
Okay, in Europe?
Yeah.
It's not so many. It's nothing.
To be able to reach the climate goals in Sweden, we need to build 600 per week.
Sweden or where?
In Europe.
In Europe, okay.
And that's about like how far away we are from the actual
goal.
Demand.
Our demand, yeah.
Yeah. So we need to charge it up. The actual building.
But is it a matter of, it's not a matter of budget, or could be, but I mean, but what I understand now is like a conflict between different actors or owners.
Yeah, it's also a problem with budget, I would say.
Yeah, in
Sweden specifically, like compared to rest of Europe, the electricity is cheap. Even though we always complain,
it's very expensive with the prices of the electricity.
We complain a lot because we've had even cheaper. But compared to Europe, we are actually cheap. Even the expensive parts in Sweden are cheap. just like as a reference, I was in Rotterdam the other week, and their electricity price is almost double ours. And that's like, they're like, yeah, it's winter, you know, it's very, very, very different. So like for us, it's very cheap, but we need to be able to sustain it kind of, because it goes up and down, up and down, up and down.
Yeah. Like the price. Mm. So politics and the infrastructure, the charging points, I think people already start to buying.
Yeah.
Something else we need to do, like to transform the system?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is actually politics demand to the electricity companies as well. Because Sweden has so cheap electricity, it takes a while for an electricity company to actually get a refund on their investment for a charging post. It can take 5 to 10 years to actually have the charging post give back money.
Yeah.
Because it's quite expensive to build. Mm. It can take up to like 500,000 Swedish krona, which is like 50,000 euro.
To build what?
To build a charging post.
That's so much.
Yeah, you have to dig in the ground and like get the cables, yeah, and then you have to have the actual post, and like everything around it, mm-hmm, can cost a lot.
But is our like our cities are prepared for this? Like, is there a place for charging stations or post?
Right now, you traditionally build it on space that already exists. It's not that you don't have the space, but or in Stockholm specifically, you don't have the space in many regions like Old Town or stuff like that, because it's built in a different era, and it's very narrow streets, and the charging post itself can take up to 0.5 meter in like width, so it takes a lot of like a walking. And I read the other day about someone demanding that the charging post actually be put in the car street or the parking lot or parking spot instead of on the walkways, which I can agree would be a really good thing. But it creates a lot of problems as well.
Yeah, yeah. But like, because now a lot, I guess you see a lot of new projects, like new sections or new design for our streets. Do you see they are putting a place for a charging station or no? We're still doing as the same way we did before.
They're doing a lot different, I would say. There are laws now in Sweden where you have to
make a space for
not make a space for it per se, but you have to drag out the possibility to put cables in the ground. You have to prepare that when you build new areas, and that's actually a demand. You have to have every parking spot be able to have a charging post, and then you can reapply it after a while when you see the demand for it. But just having that infrastructure is so important.
Yeah, of course. So if you summarize, like, what do we need to do in order to transform our system to a more electrical one?
I would say the politics need to like fix a system that invites doing these kind of changes to begin with. The municipality needs to have way more demand from these different companies that want to put up charging posts. And they also have to have a system in place for when they actually get a question from these. So the municipal role is really important. But the forefront is the state organization, the traffic organization, Trafikverket, we call it. They have a really important role for logistics. So those three are the main three things that needs to change right now. And they are
changing,
but not fast enough.
Yeah. So can you tell us about the project you work with? Like, tell us more example.
Yeah. So for me, I work as a consultant, as you know. We follow how the business is looking, right? But a few things that I've done that are really like interesting to me is, for example, looking at these like big highway roads and where we can put charging posts for big trucks, for example. That's the one project that I have. It's very interesting. And we're also looking at fixing a so-called MAC or station for specifically electrical that can have solar panels on the roof and stuff like that. It's a cool concept.
So it's like just a gas station, but now it's for electrical.
Yeah.
I want to ask you also, like, is there a difference between like if we want a charging station for a truck or for an, like a normal car?
It's different in the power that you need, because the trucks have way more batteries to be able to actually go distances. So it's first of all space, because they're bigger than private cars, but also the actual power. But usually, like if you know that a truck is going to be there for a longer time, you can have the same power as a private for a private car, and they will just stand there longer. That's the only difference when you have the power. The power concept is, it just takes time. So if you have the time, then it's fine.
Yeah, but like it's the same dimension of the charging post. Yeah. I don't need to have a bigger one just because I have. Okay, cool. So other projects you work on?
Other projects I've done for a few municipalities, different strategies, like how a municipality should think when they create a system for charging posts. It's very interesting to learn the municipality way of doing things. I was involved in the Stockholm plan for charging, which is basically that they have all these places in the city which are regular parking today, and they say to all the companies that want to do charging that we have these places, which one do you want to build on? And then they give that area over with the nyttjanderättsavtal, as it's called, when you give a space over to use for another company, which is really interesting. And they got a spike in just charging posts. It went really fast when they actually had a system in place. A third one that I'm working on right now is charging buses, which is a pretty new project, actually, but it's very interesting. In Stockholm, they want all their buses to be full electrical, but they have all these depots where you put the buses when they're not used.
Like when you park the bus.
Yeah. And all these places don't have the infrastructure for electrical yet. Okay. They can't charge their buses completely.
Yeah.
So we're looking at how we should enable that.
Like adding more charging stations and so on. And
how the charging stations should look, where we have all these like electricity cables, all of that, like from the ground up, which is super interesting.
But like, does it affect, because I know here, like when you have something with electricity, you need to have like, what do you call it? Avstånd.
Yeah.
It's like safety zone or like, I don't know, 50 meter or how is it now?
Yeah, it depends on what you do,
yeah.
I would say. Usually for actually just charging, it's not that much regulation.
Mm.
It's different if you have like farligt avfall or like dangerous compounds. That's when you have the real distances or if you're close to like railway.
Okay, so like for instance, now in the bus project, do you need that kind of safety zone around the bus parking? Because now you have so many charging points or something like this?
Not really. It might have to do with fire if a bus starts burning or something like that.
Yeah.
But we have people in the group that are discussing this that actually look at specifically the fire aspect of it. So we'll see. It's very new, this project.
Yeah.
So we'll see what they come up with. It's going to be very interesting.
Mm. And you mentioned that you do some kind of analysis or strategies. Can you share with us like one of the projects and tell us like the different steps you work with, like the methodology?
Yeah. So what we look at then is, first of all, where should they put their focus in charging posts?
Mm.
What's the focus on for a municipality, a small municipality? What should they focus on? After that, we look at how can you actually get money from this system. How can you make it sustainable economically for your municipality?
Like what you're gonna build?
Yeah. So you put out money to build, but how do you get the money back for building so you don't just put out money all the time? And for small municipalities, that's very important.
Yeah.
To be able to like sustain themselves economically. Then we look at different charging posts. What should you focus on which places? You have for public spaces, what charging posts are good there? For homes, what charging are good there? And so on. And you put out like which charging is good for which situation.
Okay.
And then as a last step, you look at how much will it cost to build this?
Mm.
You know, and how much will you gain in a year, for example?
Like the return of your investment.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, as you mentioned in the beginning, it costs a lot to build and like takes so many years to get back something.
Yeah. Especially for the public spaces. Mm. I would say, or.
What do you mean by public space? Like
a square, for example, if you want to get your car there.
Like a parking in a public space. Yeah. Okay. Mm.
Yeah. So usually you shouldn't have parking there.
Of course, yeah.
You know, but I would say they did a study after the Stockholm project with charging that, and came up with that almost, I think it was 85 or 90% of all electric car owners, they only charge at home.
Ah, okay.
Only at home. Because they never, like a full electric vehicle with a good battery can drive like 400 kilometers or something like that. It's very fun. It's like driving from Stockholm to Gothenburg in one tank.
Okay, cool.
Which means that if you work in Stockholm and you take your car to your work, you will never go that distance. No. So you can go to work, stay at work, go home, and you will have like 70% left. And then you can just put it in the charger again when you get home. Yeah. So that's why home charging is like one of the most important things to start off.
Yeah. And how do you know, like, average how many hours it takes for charging a private car?
Depends on which charging you have. You always have a normal charger, it's called 22 kilowatts, I think it is, for homes. Because at home, you get home, you sleep 8 hours, you go back to work. And in 8 hours, you can charge full with that. When in a square, or if you're going to a grocery store, you're only there for like half an hour to an hour, somewhere like that. And then you need like these fast chargers to be able to get full, right? And that's how it is. And if you're going long distance, and you stop at one of these like meeting spots, these hubs where a lot of cars fill up their gas.
Yeah, McDonald's.
And yeah. Then you only stay for like while you eat, which is like 45 minutes ish. And then you need these superchargers that really like give back fast.
Yeah. So can we think cars like our phones?
Yeah, like, kind of.
Like, that's charging, you know?
It's kind of the same.
Yeah.
And also very interesting is that you should always keep your car between 20 and 80% battery.
It's just like the phone as well.
Yeah. It's the same as the phone. It's the same concept, kind of.
But and, larger batteries.
Yeah. And the interesting part with an electrical vehicle is that it's always fully charged when you go from home, right? Yeah. You don't have to worry about how much gas do I have left? Do I need to go fill up the gas? Because it's always full
At
home if you have a charger at home.
Yeah. And like when you work with this kind of projects, because this is nothing we learn in school.
No.
So how did you start to learn all this?
It started off with a colleague actually who worked with this a lot himself. His name was Henrik. He did a lot of these kind of analysis to begin with, and I helped him when I was newly graduate. And after that, I started like getting my own questions, and I started taking my own projects every now and then. And then when I moved to Turin's a little over a year ago, my boss asked me if I wanted to like lead the business in that part. So I started like really studying about electricity and really getting into the business of it. How can I do interesting projects that is fun to do and actually give value to customers, kind of. And I started going into all of these like nitty-gritty kind of things. Started getting colleagues that also were interested in this from like electricity consultants, for example. And we've been partnering up to do that, which is really interesting.
Do you need to know like all details about the batteries, the charging stations, the voltages and all this? Or no, you need to just understand the concept. How does it work?
For a traffic planner, you just need to understand the concept. I would say focus on getting which charging posts that have which purpose. So the purpose of it. And then like if you want to go even more in detail, then you can check the battery. How much kilowatt hours does the battery have, which means how many kilometers can go and so on. And that's when you start to ramp up your knowledge.
Yeah. So do you feel yourself like, how to say, you were alone when you start to work with this project? Is there like information about this on internet, books, handbooks, or?
There's a lot of interesting handbooks.
Let's say you didn't have Henrik.
Yeah.
So how the scenario would look like?
It would be very hard for me to start, I would say, without him already having like the groundwork on information. But there is a lot of companies, at least in Sweden, that do all these like prognoses and all this information about how it's looking right now. Usually, for me, PowerCircle is a really good company to keep in track, kind of. They post a lot of good information. And there's a lot of R Sweden is really good. Fossil Free 2030, I think they're called, really good. So there's a lot of difference.
And you mentioned about, like you say, you should know like the purpose of each charging post. Do we have like a company that delivering the entire thing, or how do you build the charging station?
So usually like that's not my part. Like I leave it after I've done either the analysis, but there's a lot of companies. Like there's so many companies that do this. I went to a conference like half a year ago in Sweden. And just saw like even just the payment of electricity. There's a lot of companies, you know.
Yeah.
So it's so complex, and that's why it's so hard to get into as well, because there's so much stuff that you could learn, that you could look into, and you can never get enough information. Kind of.
Yeah. Now I feel a bit bad for the urban designers because now they have one more element to think about, like, you know, the colors, the how does it fit and so on. Do you hear a lot of this kind of discussions, like fights between urban designers and traffic engineers about this?
Yes. And that was also one of the hardest things for me to get into, I would say, because at one part you realize that electrical cars is like the new thing, new generation kind of thing. But as a traffic planner, you also know that electrical cars is never the solution to everything. It's just a puzzle piece for everything. I think it was Brent Toderian who said, he said a very good quote on Twitter, like, electrical cars are better than fossil cars, but the real solution is always less cars. And that's kind of how it is.
Yeah.
It's better, but it's not perfect.
Mm-mm-mm. That's true. So what challenges do you face when you work with these kind of projects?
There's a lot of different challenges. For starters, traffic planners aren't built to think about electricity. It's one of the hardest things, because you need to learn a completely new technique, kind of, or that you haven't used before, which is both interesting, but also so taxing on your energy levels in your body as well, because you have to like read up on completely new things and learn everything to be able to actually perform as a traffic planner in real life. So
as an electrical traffic.
Yeah. it's very hard. So for people getting into this and think it's interesting, realize that you can only do as much as a traffic planner. You need other people with specific knowledge about specific things to be able to enhance your knowledge. You can't learn everything on your by yourself, because you would have had to go through a completely new master to learn about the electricity.
But what can I do if I am, let's say I'm alone? Because your Tyrens is a very big company. Yeah. So what if I like a very small company and I really don't have other people to help me? How can I do that?
Like, I think Sweden is very, like, maybe not unique, but very good in that way because of consultants. Like, it's very easy to get a start with a consultant. And maybe after a while, you can learn enough that you can work yourself with it, you know? I would say that is one of the best ways to go. Get someone who actually knows about the thing you want to learn and learn from them, and then be able to take over yourself.
Yeah. So back to my question, what are the challenges? So knowledge is one.
Yeah. Knowledge is one. I would say changing the way you think, kind of. You need to reconstruct your head, kind of. So both knowledge, but also like thinking differently.
Like thinking in which way?
Into more like function, technical function. I would say electricity is a lot more complex than usual traffic systems, especially when you have to involve them in traffic.
Yeah.
It's complex.
But like now, again, everything is about the car. Now it's just electrical car. Like, what happened with cities for people?
No. That's very interesting. And that's what I talked about before. Like, I would say after cars comes like everything else that it's electric. Bikes can be electric. We've talked a lot about at work with having, instead of cars going into the city delivering goods, you could have bikes delivering goods instead, like the last mile kind of thing. And that could be done with electrical bikes. That's also a part that's very interesting. How do you create an infrastructure for bikes as well?
Mm. Yeah, but like for me, I feel that when we develop cities now, a lot of, again, much focus is on transforming the old system about cars, which means we are still going to have cars as a prior.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important to reduce cars. I would say that's the like final step, kind of reduce them. Just reduce them in as a whole.
Like reduce them, how to say, put taxes or take off some parking spaces or what?
You could do, there's a lot of different things that's been done. In Ghent, for example, they just increased the pricing on like having a car in the inner city. So it became like, I think it was twice or three times as expensive to have a car in the inner city, which meant that people started using their cars outside of the city instead, which is very interesting. And it's been done a lot. Public transport is also really an important part in making people not having to use a car. So all these like different systems contribute in its own way to making more and more people not having to use a car.
Do you have other challenges that you face when you work with a project?
Sustainability is one of the biggest issues. Like for now, I would say now you talk a lot about how do we do it. Before, like 4 or 5 years ago, we only talked about what is sustainability. Like
what is it about?
Yeah. Now people want to know what do we do to fix it.
Or how do we do to fix it? Yeah.
And usually, like less cars is better, right? So you want to reduce the amount of cars, you want to push them like outside of the city, you want more space in the city for bikes, walking, public transport. In my world, I would see a city where there are no cars, actually. Like cars can be used for long traffic between cities, maybe, but in the city, there is no need, when you have good public transport, good bike infrastructure, there's no need to have a car. You can go from one side of Stockholm to the other side in 40 minutes with bike. Why do you need a car for that?
Yeah, like the thing is with all, you know, all talks about, car-free cities. I mean, you cannot tell people stop driving cars if you don't provide them with the other options, right?
Yeah, it's very important.
But when you say sustainability as a challenge, is it like hard to achieve the goals or hard to make something sustainable?
I would say it's hard to achieve the goals. One of the reasons why I say that is because I feel that human beings are built to want more and more and more all the time. And if we have a specific set of standards, which is driving car, it's very hard to take away that way of living. Without giving a substitute. Yeah. But usually people who are used to driving cars don't want to hop on a bike and go away.
Yeah, because like in many cultures, like owning a car is something.
Yeah, it's a status.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
But yeah, yeah.
So that's why sustainability is a challenge, because we need to make people think different about their lifestyle. And that's very hard. And if we can't do that, we won't reach the climate goals. I think it was like the other week, they announced that even if every car is electrical, we still won't reach the climate goals. Yeah. So that's what I meant in the beginning with it's a puzzle piece.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
It's not the solution. It's
not, yeah, exactly. Not the solution. Interesting. And you mentioned that about the bikes and so on. So There are also talks about how do we make more bike lines, more like electrical bikes, something like this.
Yeah, definitely. Or like, how do you think about this last mile kind of trip? Specifically for logistics, it's very important. Because it's with digital marketing right now and digital markets, everything gets sent everywhere, right? And that's why the logistics in the city, if it can be used by bikes or in a sustainable way, it just does so much for the city, specifically for the city.
And now we talked about like why should we have electrical cars and transform the system and so on. Now I talk to you from more like city for people perspective. So what are the disadvantages? Disadvantage comes when you have electrical cars in a city life.
The main challenge, and it's something that I would actually like all traffic planners, all urban planners to think about, is that even if we have electrical cars, it will still be more congestion. Right? We won't. That's why reduced cars is so important, because if you have electrical cars, this like climate scam or like shame that comes into owning a car, it goes away because the car is sustainable, like, or that's how it's marketed at least. And that means that everyone will have a car because it's sustainable now, right? It's greenwashed to be
true. That. True. It's fine to own an electrical car.
Exactly. Or that's like how it's marketed at least. And that means more cars, more congestion, like they still take up the same space in the city. And for city specific, it's going to get worse with electrical cars. And that's what I'm afraid of as a traffic planner.
So what should traffic planners stop doing?
I would say stop thinking about the system and start thinking about the space. Specifically around like socially important places. Many times traffic planners think of everything as a system. It has to work like a specific way. But sometimes you make something the way it's supposed to be according to paper. While it actually would be better to just do it differently for the place itself.
Yeah, for the context there.
Yeah. So start thinking about the place and how the place works. Like what do you have in this place and how does the traffic contribute or diminish that?
But let's imagine this scenario. Like in the future in a public space, there are charging stations. People charging their bikes, cars, and so on. Can I trust this system? Can I let my children play there without being afraid that something will explode from the car or from the station, or when it's raining, something will happen to the playground or public space?
That's always And you, who have worked a lot with child perspective, is probably aware of this, but the area that you let out your kid has been decreasing for a long time. And I was at a conference a few years back where they said that like a 70-year-old Swedish person has the same physique as a 30-year-old Canadian, or had that at, in the 70s at least. But now, how it is now is that a 35-year-old Swedish person is the same physique as a 30-year-old Canadian. And because Sweden has been really good at child perspective before, but we've kept decreasing like everything in physical, in the physical aspect. So yeah, it's hard.
So I cannot trust this system?
I would say yes. Specifically in Sweden, you can trust it. We have a lot of guidelines for how things should be, but it's also very hard. Like parents don't want to let their kids out because they're like, for example, their neighbor is taking the car to get their kid to school. It's like this circle of bad things. So you don't want to let your kid go to school because the neighbor is taking the car and so on. And then you take the car instead. And then the next neighbor thinks the same because you take the car, and it just keeps going like that. So everyone takes the car. it's a hard nut to crack. But I would say like you need, if you have good infrastructure, the safety aspect is always going to be there. Like separate bike lanes and stuff like that.
Yeah, but back again, like, how much do you think about the climate here? Because like it's snowing, raining. When it comes to the charging, like and electricity and all this, it's not dangerous.
No. I would say it's not. Like the way it's designed is that it should work around those kind of aspects. And specifically, like we have around 4,000 charging posts in Stockholm now, and we haven't seen those kinds of problems at all.
Like accidents or something. No.
The like primary danger is that an electrical car will start to burn in a garage, for example. But at the same time, it doesn't have anything to do with charging. Like
yeah, it's the battery or the car.
Yeah, an electrical vehicle will still stay in the garage even if there's no charging, right? Because they have to stay somewhere. So then it's a question about the actual car instead of the charging.
But like the automobile industry, they are electrifying their new cars, right?
Yeah. It's coming many, out many of them. Every week is coming up new.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's the leading, like the leader in this?
Interesting.
Industry.
I think every car company will probably say that they're leading. but there's a few who are really good at it. Polestar is really good. Kia has actually a lot of good cars, but they like every car company has like 5-6 different models right now. So it's hard to say. I read the other day that Mercedes beat the record in the longest distance without charging.
Cool. Not they Tesla. No. I thought it Tesla. Okay.
They went 120 Swedish miles, so 1,200 kilometers.
Wow.
In one charge.
Cool. That's cool. No?
So we're getting there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But again, like it's on the cost of the battery, like the material. No one came with a new alternative.
No,
with all this innovation and knowledge. Exactly. And
there's like two aspects with the battery that is interesting, I think, for a climate perspective. The first is that you don't emit where you are with the car. You emit somewhere else. So globally, there's emission, but locally, there's no emissions, right? The second one is that batteries right now are very heavy, which means that the car in itself, it might be no emissions, but the tires from the car gets pushed down because of the weight, and they put out the particles in the
like
air.
The friction between the cars and the asphalt.
So, wow. So in a social context, like in a city context, these particles actually create air pollution, which is not good in a sustainable city. So it's not like all glory, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's not like shining and a perfect solution is how we imagine it.
And I think as traffic planners, it's very important to realize this, that like it's better, but not perfect. I've said it many times, but it's important to keep that in mind.
It's good. It's good to repeat that as well. Super interesting. And before we go to the next section, it's going to be about more about us too. So if you summarize like this electrical system, what has as an impact? Is it good, bad?
I would say all in all, it's good. There's still a lot of key challenges that needs to be solved. But all in all, it's good. And I think it's good not only in the car context, but also in like electrifying bikes and everything in transport electrified is good in a way, specifically in Stockholm, because we have so many hills. It's unreasonable to be able to bike all this way with all these like tall bridges and so on. But in the Netherlands, for example, everything is flat, right? So you don't even need gears on your bike. You can just keep going and it's just like straight ahead, no altitude, you know.
Life is good.
Yeah, life is good then.
Interesting, Max. So in the second part of this episode, me and you were talking about like, talk about how we made a friendship, talk about like university, give some advice for like students, new employee, or even seniors, how to deal with the new employees and so on. Just to reflect about our career so far.
Yeah.
How long have you been working? Five?
5 years now. January, it's 5 years. Yeah,
nice. Congratulations.
Yeah. You too.
Yeah, almost going to be 5 years. So we talked about like it's why... I will ask you the question why it's important to create a network and like good relations with the students in the same class for students like attending university now and not just sticking with only one person for like 3 years or 5 years or 2 years of master.
So for me, I would say the best advice I got was from my handledare. What do you call it? Advisor in Sweco, where I did my thesis, which was like, never exclude anyone because you never know when you will meet them again. And I think that's a really core aspect of both the studying, but also like going out and working, because like you never know where these colleagues that you had in school, where they will end up. So like always keeping a good climate, you will meet them again in a project in 5 years or 10 years. And then you will know that we had a good relationship in school. This will be a good project, right? And I think that's a really very interesting and important piece to think about. For having new students in work environment when you're a senior, I think the very important part is actually showing them how work is really like. And not like sugarcoating stuff. If it's difficult, it's difficult. And that's important for them to know, because otherwise they will just think that everything is sunshine and rainbows. And then they get to work and they have a few difficult like projects, and then they hit a wall instantly and then they're done for, you know?
No, it's an interesting point you mentioned about like, create a good atmosphere with other like your classmates. I think first it's because of like just being a human being, you know, just being a friendly and learn from each other and build this network, because this increases the chances of you getting a job or a project in the future. So imagine if I know only Max, or if I know 100 people also, then my chances are much more bigger to get a job or ask a questions or something like this. Because I remember like we had let's say people only like these two are always together, and they never talk with other people, And following up, it's like maybe a special case, or I don't know, like it's, they had very super struggle to get a job or and so on. But the opposite is like, let's say, I think many of our classmates, we helped each other to find a job. Like she worked in the municipality and she'd be like, ah, but you don't have a job. Okay, I will talk with my boss or maybe talk with Max or and so on. So like he built this kind of network already when you're in the school. So when you graduate, you have it, but it's a more professional.
Yeah. And I mean, you helped me get a job at Sweco. You know, I remember us joking about it, that like it's going to be very nice when one of us gets a job, because then that person can get everyone else in.
Right.
And it's kind of like that. And the more people you have in your network in school, the more chances you have of someone getting a job and getting you in, you know?
And even if you think like more longer in the long run, let's say now we know so many people like from our class, and one working in the municipality, one working in the like retail.
Yeah.
Let's say if you get bored of your work or you don't like your work, you still even can change job.
Yeah.
Because you have a connection.
Yeah.
And of course you should be good and so on at work, but still.
One of the important parts, I think, to realize as a student is that most of the jobs that we get here when we switch jobs and everything, you don't do it through like one of these papers on the internet applications. You don't do it through an application.
No, I don't know.
I don't think I've gotten any job in urban planning through an application. And it says a lot, because like, especially in Sweden, a lot of companies poach other consultants. So like the consultant, headhunt different consultants because they have a specific knowledge about something that they want to increase their market in or something like that. So just asking companies, you usually, with experience at least, get a position. But just getting that first step in, that's the absolute important. After you get the first step in, you can just keep floating.
I agree with you. Like, I think many of our listeners also face that. Like, this all application on homepage is like super useless. Yeah. And, you know, you spend a lot of time on filling in and doing the best motivation letter and CV. Then they voted. Unfortunately, we move with other candidate. And in many cases, the other candidate, like connections. Yeah. So also like what I wanted to talk with you about is when we started in the beginning, many of us were silent in the first months of the work because we say, I just graduated, I don't have so much knowledge to contribute to the project. So just keep silent and listen to the seniors. And that's it. Like, don't share anything of what you think. So I see, like, even now after 5 years, I see also when we get new students, I see like they're very silent, shy to talk. I understand it's a new work atmosphere and so on. But like, I tell them, come on, it's not that you're useless or don't understand anything. So what is your advice to newly graduated people?
I always tell the newly graduates that start in my group, talk more. It's so important. And because the thing you have to realize is that all the seniors, they're like built from a different era of planning. And in school, you learn a lot to challenge, right? To challenge concepts. And when you get into work, that's like applying all of that into real life. So you have to challenge, like, why do we have to have a bus here? Why do we have to have cars in this area? All of that is like mindsets from people who learned planning 10, 15 years ago. And that's what you need to realize. Like, you are the new generation of knowledge. You also need to apply it to the people, even if they're scary. sometimes they're very scary because they are so sure that they know the right thing. But for me, at least, I try to listen a lot and actually take what the new students or colleagues say and actually try to apply it to the project in like small, subtle ways. You can do it as a project manager. For example, asking in a project if it's okay that you take in a junior in the project. It's like 90% of the time it's okay. If it's like, usually it's okay if it's not at the same cost as you, if you know what I mean.
Like the price.
Yeah, the price. Yeah. But it's still okay. And I think a lot of people forget to invite juniors and just focus on their own thing because they either are scared to leave work to other people or that they think that it will take so long to explain. But I would say like 9 out of 10 times when I've invited a junior, it's always gone better than before.
Yeah. So your advice to newly graduates and start to work is like, be brave and just share or challenge, ask questions. But I think also like with time, it's important. You're going to ask questions, of course. You're going to challenge many stuff. But at the same time, you should learn and try to come with a solution.
Yeah.
Because your job is not going to be like a critical jury just asking questions. You need also to be part of the solutions. Mm. Otherwise, like they will not accept this as all.
And a very important thing, I think, is when you start off, ask all the seniors questions all the time about everything. It can be, how do we grab coffee in the morning? It and anything, because no one in the consultant business or in planning business hates talking about what they love. You know, no one hates about talking about that. So just asking, you will get so much information and also learn how the person thinks and acts and like people.
Yeah.
You will learn people.
Yeah, exactly. And also like advice from me could be like, engage yourself in the topic. Let's say if you work with electrification or if you work with child-friendly city, read more, like explore what's happening, what people are doing. It doesn't mean that when you finish school and graduate, you're done and now ready to work. No, of course, it's going to be like, intense with all new knowledge you're going to learn, and like tools and methods and people you're going to meet. But at the same time, like do your homework when you go back home or something, like invest hour in learning the profession.
And I think there's something that I call the 1 year rule, which is when you start a new job, regardless if you're a senior or if you're a junior or if you're a newly graduate, it will always take 1 year for you to get to a point where you start getting the same questions again. Every time. It will always take 1 year.
Yeah.
Then you get questions that you already have solved before and you can, because you will get stressed in the start. You will get stressed all the time.
Yeah.
Because everything is new. You have to think all the time.
Mm.
So 1 year.
Yeah.
Remember that.
What challenge you faced when you started? Or something scared you, or you were like, oh, this is not good.
I had a lot of, I was scared of talking to people mostly. Both in the meetings, but also like even my colleagues, I was scared to talk with them about stuff. And also like looking for new people. If I knew I needed a specific knowledge about something, my advisor was like, just talk to that person. But for me, it was very hard to like find new people. And I thought I had to know everything myself. And that's also, you have to allow yourself to be new.
Exactly. Like, because the thing is that you don't need to fake anything. Like, this is the reality. You just graduated and you're willing to add value to the project and so on. So you don't need to pretend that you're senior, because it's not true. And don't pretend that you're still a student and don't know anything, because it's not right now. Now it's time for you to work. So, so just how to say,
see it as a driver's license. You're allowed to do stuff yourself without a teacher present. Yeah. It's the same with the driver's license. You don't know how to drive a car perfectly, but you're allowed to drive yourself. It's the same thing.
So to summarize, what is important now, like we talked to students, how they can think in order to maximize like their chances of getting a job, how to say, fall in love more with what the, with the profession and so on. If you summarize what should seniors or people already working do in order to invite more and to welcome more the newly graduate?
I would say to begin with, invite the junior to everything you do. Regardless if it's a meeting, or it doesn't even have to be that they get paid for it. Yeah. You know, we call it like internal and external time. It could be that it's okay for a junior to follow on meetings just to learn for internal time, time the company pays themselves. And that's very important. Like I've taken a lot of juniors with me on meetings just because they were interested in the subject I was working with.
It's investment.
Yeah, it's an investment for the future. So keep inviting to FICAST, keep inviting to conferences. Conferences is very good to invite juniors. Because they, like sometimes they're free, super good, but also they give extreme amounts of information in very short time.
Information boost.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, yeah.
To do that.
Interesting. So what is the next on your career? What is your plan?
Interesting. For me, I want to work more towards social sustainability. Like that's always been my passion for urban planning to begin with. Learn about people, understand people, work towards like people's needs, kind of. I think electrification will be like a pet project kind of mine, while I will try to focus more towards social sustainability. And that's also a pro of being a consultant, that you can kind of steer yourself into what you want to do.
Like, yeah, that, yeah, exactly. Kind of project or directions and so on.
As long as you can find value in it, you can steer yourself.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. So Max, now we're more like questions about you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can choose to be something else than being a Max the human, what will you choose? You can choose anything.
This was the hardest question. The hardest question. Like if I would be an animal, I think I would be a camel.
A camel.
Yeah. Very like for my way of being is like kind of laid back but serious in a way.
Okay.
So I don't know, I just resonate with a camel.
So do you like hot weather?
Both yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
But I resonated in like the relaxedness.
Okay, like chilling.
And... yeah. I feel like that resonates with me. I have a very high stress tolerance. I keep things very like relaxed in myself.
Yeah.
Very few things is like a really serious problem for me.
Yeah, like,
in that way. Mm-hmm. So that's why. Kind of.
That's good. That's good for you. Yeah, you're gonna age, you know, like
exactly.
Live many years. Cool, camel. So in let's say in 100 years from now, when people gonna Google your name, what would you like them to read about you or hear about you?
Hopefully, I hope people will read about me actually contributing to cities for people in a way. I don't necessarily have to be like number one on Instagram, you know, but that I've done projects that actually have benefited to the good of people is like my main goal, I think.
And name some project or something you did in your career that you're super proud of.
That I'm super proud of. That's a hard one. I would say it's been very interesting with the electrification and everything, but the one kind of project that always interests me is how to make roads safer for kids to going to school. I just completely love those projects. It's so interesting. It's so complex. It's it's like a villa street having a highway traffic in 15 minutes. Like, should you plan for the highway traffic or for the villa street? You know, it's just the complexness of those projects are so interesting. And the results of them are incredible.
Yeah. Do you manage to see a result of your project?
Some of them I've seen. We did a project in Södermalm in Stockholm, like the inner city of Stockholm, where we noticed that there was a lot of car parkings in front of three schools. And we decided to take away those and add bike parking. And we managed to add, like, I think it was 100, 150 bike parkings. And it was 3 years ago, and they are completely full now, even even during evenings.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It just, you could see in real time that this was a demand.
Exactly.
That actually fixed a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That was very cool.
Mm. And Max, name one thing or one project you did in your career and you regret.
Oof.
Don't tell the podcast.
I'll keep silent about this. No. The thing with consultants is that you have to do the highs and the lows. I think for me personally, being in like big road projects is always kind of demotivating. But I try to always demand for sustainable or socially sustainable solutions in that project. So for example, a few years back, we had a project that we had to redesign a road. And I demanded that we have actual bike lane next to that road, which actually got into the project, which is kind of cool. But in as a whole in the project, it felt really unmotivating to build a new road, you know. Yeah. Because you know it's wrong, but it's the project is that, you know, and you get assigned to that project and try to make the best of it. But in the end, it's still a road being built.
Mm. Can you say no to a project? Maybe like now students also listened. Like if a project is not really matching with your values, can you say no? What are the consequences?
Of course you can say no. It has to do with the company as well, I think. Sometimes you don't like a project, but it's valuable to the company. I think you've had these situations appear as well. I would say many times you can decide to not do the project yourself. And I think that's like how I've done some things. Like if we get a question about doing a project and I'm really not feeling it, sometimes I can ask to not be in it.
Okay. That's like a way of telling no.
And I think you get more opportunities like that as more senior as you get.
Yeah.
As a junior, you can't really pick and choose. So you have to like take the projects that actually arrive to you. But as the more senior you get, the more you can actually pick and choose, which is a good thing, I think.
Yeah. And how do you find work-life balance as a camel? I'm just kidding.
As a camel, I would say it's always a hard thing to do, and I think everyone struggles with it until they go into pension. It's something that you, I think, also evolves as you work. Like you have different goals, like you get a family and then it switches, you know. For me, one of the best things I've ever done is remove notifications on my phone. When you work, you get a lot of notifications, and sometimes people work later than you. And you will keep getting notifications.
Yeah.
And that's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I decided after a while that I will only answer when I feel that I have the time. So I removed all notifications and I just go into the mail and the Teams we use when I feel that I have the time and
you,
just focus.
You mean during working hour or after?
Both.
Okay.
Sometimes I feel like I haven't probably worked as efficient as I should have during the work hours. So I work some later. It happens every now and then, but I try to reduce it as much as possible. It depends on deadlines and stuff as well. But the work-life balance is that, like, try to remove the work aspect when you're not at work, kind of. I would say that's a good start. But I've had colleagues who loved that aspect to work and live at the same time. One colleague had, like, he drove his kids to school to practice and stuff during, like, later work hours. And then he just, when everyone has gone to bed, he started working again for 2 hours and then went to sleep. And that was his life. He liked it.
What do you think?
For me, I wouldn't work like that.
Because of?
Because it would stress me out to not have any downtime.
Mm.
For me, the downtime is really important.
Downtime, you mean like you just chill and don't work?
You just chill. You don't think about anything. You like remove your head from from everything, kind of. I need at least some hours during the evening before I go to bed where I like don't focus on work, because otherwise I will just stress about it and I have to wait with sending a mail until the morning and I just can't sleep, you know?
Do you take your laptop home?
Yeah, I do.
You do.
But I never take it out of the bag. it has to do with if I want to work from home or not. I always want to have the option in the morning
that you can,
that I can work from
home.
That's good. If I'm not feeling well.
Yeah.
It's always good to have the option to just stay at home.
Mm-hmm. How is your day routine? Like, when do you wake up? What do you do?
So I try to get to work at like 8:30. Kind of, which means that, I go up maybe 7 in the morning. And like, I don't have a long morning routine, like shower, breakfast, brush my teeth, fix some hair, then go, you know, the usual stuff.
Yeah.
So
you don't do yoga and listen to music?
No. I usually listen to podcasts during the mornings to work. I think it's very interesting to like get in the zone kind of and just like you just listen. You don't have to like record or
like listen
write
carefully
down.
And pay super attention.
You just listen.
Yeah.
And it can be comedy podcast sometimes. It can be Urbanistica sometimes. It depends on moods.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you. Yeah.
Sometimes you don't. When you have a really bad mood.
And it's not work-related podcast.
Yeah, and you put on Urbanistica and you're like, this is not what I want to hear right now. And then you want to listen to something comedy. Kind of.
Just sorry for interruption. I agree with you. Like, I also listen to other like urbanism work podcasts. Mm. But when you're not in the good mood, you don't need to like find something like different.
Yeah.
Like something else, you know?
Yeah. So I have a few, like 2 or 3 that have different aspects. And I try to, so one comedy, and then I have Urbanistica that I listen to, and then I have one more that is just like random. I think they want to do comedy, but it's more like they talk about random stuff.
Okay, cool.
I've started listening to the Scrubs Rewatch podcast lately.
What is it about?
It's they're rewatching Scrubs and talking about it. The people that worked on Scrubs, the show.
Ah.
It's a comedy show from long ago.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
So it's kind of fun to just listen and learn about how the everyday life was in a recording studio with a really hit show.
Yeah. And I think this is very important, especially for us working with as urban practitioners.
Mm.
That we listen about other stuff to get inspiration, but also like to connect with people that we are building cities, you know? We say like cities for people. But if we only listen to urbanism podcast, then we're not really getting out of our bubble. So I think a podcast, listening to a podcast, could be an interesting way of getting out of our bubble.
Yeah. But like, yeah, learning about people, different people, like all kinds of people. That's the important part. And not just see the people working with people or it's also important to you want to learn about schools, but like you need to ask the parents, you need to ask the kids, you need to ask the teachers. Like all of these have different perspective of how things should be.
True. It's so you important. Go to work, you listen podcast, go to work, start working.
Yeah. And I usually work till about 16:30, 17:05-ish, somewhere like that. Depends on, sometimes we have like after works and stuff like that. And then you need to end a bit early or something like that. But I try to, for me, the work day, I try to make sure that I get like 40 hours per week.
Okay.
But then how I do that every day differs.
It's up. Yeah. It depends. Yeah.
Depends on the day, my mood, how I'm feeling.
Projects and so on. Yeah. Do you have any advice like how to be less stressed during the working day?
I would say,
or working hours,
do stuff when you get them. Like just as soon time, as you get them. I know you said this a lot as well.
Yeah.
Just like, I think you said it on Instagram the other day, when you get the mail, just handle it. Like don't keep it and then go and wait for a while and then send it. But you also need to notice that it's not very important that you answer in the same minute. Like sometimes waiting a day with answering is also a good thing, because you have to, when you answer every minute, people expect you to answer every minute. So you build up this like reputation kind of.
That he's quick.
Yeah, that he's quick, or he will answer instantly and he will always take care of it. But sometimes it's good to actually wait a while and let them wait, because that sets you up as well to be like, oh, okay, he will answer today. So if you answer at 5.
And also maybe like take your time to reflect about your answer, not like getting so emotional or like, you know, I don't know.
When I was a newly graduate, I always read through my mails 3 times before I sent them. Every time.
And how many times now?
Now, if it's an important mail, I will read through it a few times. But most of the mails are just like answering yes to a question. And then you just send yes.
Yeah. So like handle things in time.
Yeah.
More?
Try to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Like even it. If it's you answer within a day or you answer within a second, keep it consistent. Because I think that's important for you as well. Like people love routine. And if you keep a routine, you will always know what happens and you will always be able to find work-life balance through that, I think.
Other tricks you do?
Those are the two main ones, like no notifications and consistency. I also try to, I use going and grabbing a glass of water as a way to break from the computer screen.
So you don't bring like a
big
bottle.
I think it's important to, even if it's like 1 minute, I think it's important to just stand up, look away from the computer for a while, and maybe ask a question to a colleague or something, and then get back. Because otherwise you will get the headache.
Yeah.
Just from watching the computer screen too much.
But then you need to remind yourself about doing this.
Yes.
Mm.
And that's where the glass of water comes in. If it's empty, you need to fill it up. that's when you know.
Maybe sometimes I even forget that there is a glass of water.
Cool. No, but it's good. Find something that makes you go away from the screen. Yeah. I think that's really good.
Yeah. What like... other routines you usually do like during working hours?
I have a lot of things that I think I don't think about. I do subconsciously. I try to, when I have an idea in my head of something I could cooperate with someone else with, I always go to that person instantly and just ask the question. It doesn't have to be that I have a concrete concept already. I just ask a question. Would you be interested in this?
Okay.
And then I go back to my to my seat. Sometimes it's a lot of fun to do that.
Yeah.
You also build your network by doing that, right?
Yeah, this is like the human connection.
Yeah.
So important. Mm? And when you go, when you finish work, what do you do after work?
I just go home or go to some after work. In Tyrens, where I work, we have actually a lot of after works, which is kind of fun. Sometimes you can't be on all of them. But yeah, try to be involved with your colleagues because you learn about them. And if you learn about your colleagues, you know how to deal with situations when they appear. And one of the most important things I think I've ever thought about during work is that you will not be buddy buddies with everyone at work.
You will not, or you should not?
You will not.
Okay.
It's not possible. You can't be super friends with everyone.
I mean, in school?
Yeah. Some people you work very well with. You connect. You can have good fikas. You can talk. Some people you just don't get along with. It doesn't have to be anything bad. You just don't get along with them. Interests and stuff, you know. And it's important to surround yourself with the people kinds of people that you connect with. Because otherwise it can spiral into negativity as well. And if you have a lot of people that are negative around you, or for you negative, it could also create stress. So surround yourself with people that you enjoy being around during work hours.
Do you see people you work with as a family or as a team?
As a team, mostly. It depends. Some people you get along with professionally, and some people you get along with privately. It's always hard to know, because it doesn't have to be if you get along with someone during spare or free time, it doesn't have to be that you get along with them during work. And that's why it's so hard to have a company with your best friend, for example.
Yeah, because
you can be super good friends during free time.
But business-wise?
Business-wise, you could just clash.
True.
And that's natural. I think my bachelor professor said that it would be weird if you had no conflicts. Then it's something is wrong if you have no conflicts, you know? And I think there's something to that. You can't get along with everyone. So surround yourself with the people you actually get along with.
Very interesting. And now we are in the last section. And I love to ask you if you're fine with me making video of you. So yeah, I put it on Instagram. So I will make a video on the second question. So first one is you give a message to yourself.
My message to myself is don't do anything you would regret. I've tried to live by that from very early in my life. It's hard, but you should always do the thing that you feel that you would regret the least. Kind of.
Yeah.
When it's a hard question.
Exactly. And the other question is, you give me and the listeners three takeaway messages.
I would say electrical cars is a puzzle piece, not the solution. Think about the people you're designing for instead of the traffic systems that surrounds them. And we need to be nicer to each other.
This is very important.
Very important.
Yeah. So, and the last question is going to be you asking it. What is your question for me and for the listeners?
I would ask, what do you guys think is the next generation of planning? Like, what is the important question during next generation's planning?
Okay.
What do you think?
I think it's going to be from my point of view, I see people talking, like, saying different stuff, but from my point of view, it's about finding these flexible areas that bring people together. Flexible, like buildings and outdoor spaces. Then let's see.
Good answer.
Thank you so much, Max, for coming. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for listening to Urbanistica podcast. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. You learned something new and also got inspired by the guest. Don't forget to share the episode on your social media and recommend it to people you think they are really interested in this topic. Thank you so much again for giving your valuable time to Urbanistica podcast. I am Mustafa Sharif. Keep up the good work. Keep loving cities.